So as we said last week, we spoke about Sfiras HaOmer, and that was just the first in a series of different shiurim on Sfiras HaOmer. Reb Zevin writes in Hamadim BaHalacha that Sfiras HaOmer is something which is very unique in its nature, because the primary sources that we have that discuss the topic of Sfiras HaOmer are very limited. We only have one page in the Gemara, we only have four sentences in the Rambam, and only one chapter in Shulchan Aruch, one siman in Shulchan Aruch. And yet he says this somehow becomes the foundation for so much halachic debate and discussion. So today we're going to have another one of those conversations about a topic that is relevant to Sfiras HaOmer, but really has very far-reaching ramifications to many other areas of halacha as well. And the topic of today's shiur is about counting Sfiras HaOmer in English, or in the vernacular, or davening, or saying Kriya Shema, or many different mitzvah opportunities that we have the observance throughout the year. Are we allowed to say some of those in English, or should they all be stated in Ivrit, in Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh? So this is a very important question. To give a little bit of an appreciation into the background of this question, let's first talk about the importance of Lashon HaKodesh in the first place. What is the reason why Lashon HaKodesh is so important? Why is it that we assume that speaking in Hebrew is something that is so central and so significant? So let's begin with the Yerushalmi in Maseches Shabbos. You look at number Aleph on the source sheet. For anyone who doesn't have, there are plenty of copies in the middle. The Yerushalmi writes in Maseches Shabbos a very striking statement. Kol mishu kavua be'eretz Yisrael. Anyone, as we know, anyone who reads the pages of Chumash knows that Eretz Yisrael is so central to everything we believe in. As we know, so many mitzvahs boil down to Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban even writes that every mitzvah is somehow augmented in its observance if you do it in Eretz Yisrael. There's something very unique and special and central about Eretz Yisrael. So that's the first on this list. Anyone who places themselves, who lives in Eretz Yisrael, the Ochel Chulim B'Tahara, or somebody who is careful their whole life to always eat everything that is only pure, Umedaber B'Lashon HaKodesh, and somebody who is careful to speak only in Lashon HaKodesh, V'Kori Kriya Shema B'Boker Uba Erev, and somebody who is careful to recite Kriya Shema every morning and every evening as we are supposed to, Muftach Lo Shuhu Mechai HaOlam Haba. You will be assured that you have a place in Olam Haba. Now that's a striking statement, because some of the things on the list we understand. Living in Eretz Yisrael obviously is a central theme to everything we believe in. If you're careful about that, you get into Olam Haba. If you're careful about saying Kriya Shema every morning and every evening, straight into Olam Haba. It makes a lot of sense. Kriya Shema is Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. It's our chance to say to God, we trust in you, we believe in you, we know that you run everything in our lives. If you do that, you surrender to him every day, straight into Olam Haba, we understand. But somebody who's careful to speak Lashon HaKodesh, how does that belong in this list? It sounds like very trivial. Doesn't sound like such an important thing to do. And yet the Yerushalmi tells us, the Gemara says, that it would seem to be on par with some of these very important principles that we would all have said on our own. So that's number one. In fact, the Sifri writes in Sefer Devarim, I didn't write it properly, it says Sifri Devarim. It's really the Sifri in Sefer Devarim. But the name of the book is the Sifri, which is one of the Midrashim. On the pasuk in Kriya Shema, "V'limadatem osam es b'neichem ledaber bam." So, what does it mean, ledaber bam? We have an obligation to teach our children ledaber bam. So, the simple understanding is, we have an obligation to teach our children ledaber bam, to speak in the words of Torah. But listen to what the Sifri learns from here. Mikan amru, from here, the rabbis taught us, "Kishehatinok mascha ledaber," when the child begins to know how to speak, "aviv medaber imo b'lashon hakodesh," the parents need to speak to that child specifically in Lashon HaKodesh, Umalamdo Torah. So, how do we teach a three-year-old Torah? So we know, we speak Torah Tzivalana Moshe, or we teach them how to say Moda Ani, or we teach them simple things that they can understand, that they have a grasp of. But here, the Sifri tells us that Lashon HaKodesh is also a central part of our obligation of Lidaber Bam. We have an obligation to teach our children not only the Torah itself, but also the language of Lashon HaKodesh. Vim Einom Vidaber Imo B'Lashon HaKodesh. Let's say we choose not to speak to our children in Lashon HaKodesh and not to teach our children Torah. Listen to the Sifri. I would never say it. Roi lo ki'ilu kovro, says the Sifri. You are not giving your children a chance of survival. Shene'emar, because the Pasuk says, V'limadetem osam es b'neichem ledaber bam. And right after that, we are taught, L'man yirbu yimeichem v'yimei v'neichem al ha'adama, which means the way to ensure that we are going to have Ribui Hayamim, that we're going to have an Arichas Yamim, how are we going to have longevity? How do we make sure that we're going to have a long and successful life? Is if we make sure, Ladaber Bam, to teach our children Lashon HaKodesh and to teach them the words of Torah itself. So that's a very surprising statement that the Sifri makes, but it's a very powerful statement, that we have an obligation to teach our children not only Torah, but also to teach them Lashon HaKodesh. The Rambam, in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, on the Mishnah, which teaches us, have a zahir b'mitzvah kala k'vachamura. So the Mishnah says we have to put an equal focus on those mitzvahs which we might not have thought are very important, because you never know. She'ein ata yodea matan scharon shel mitzvahs. You don't know what's really important in God's eyes. You don't really know what the pecking order is in Shamayim. You don't know what he considers to be important, so you really should give equal significance to everything. When the Rambam talks about what do Jews consider to be mitzvahs that are not so important, or that are so easy for us to observe, so we don't have to really put so much focus or attention on them. Says the Rambam as follows. What are we referring to? Look at number Gimel. Ra'oi lihizar b'mitzvah. One should always be careful to observe a mitzvah. Shachosh v'mbak shehi kala. There are certain mitzvahs through our experience throughout the year that we think are easy. We don't really have to give so much attention. These are simple. They're not so important. They're not so hard. Says the Rambam, what are some mitzvahs that are in that category? Number one, Simchas HaRegel, which means, who finds it difficult to enjoy a Yom Tov? Not so hard. That's one of the easier things to do. What does God ask of us already? Eat three meals every day, eat two meals, one in the morning, one in the evening, have great food, you should drink wine, you should enjoy yourselves, you should buy new clothing, the Gemara says, right? The Gemara tells us that women have to be provided with new clothing for Yom Tov because that's what makes them happy. So that's something you should put in your bank, to keep in mind that your husbands or your spouses have an obligation to make sure that they buy new clothing for you before Yom Tov. That's what the Gemara says. So Simchas Yom Tov, we think, is one of the easy things. But says the Rambam, you think it's easy, but really, to do it right is not so easy. To do it right is not so easy, says the Rambam. So you should make sure to give attention to that as well. And secondly, says the Rambam, V'limud Lashon HaKodesh. And to learn the language of Lashon HaKodesh is one of those things we think, not so important on the pecking order. I have to light Shabbos candles. I have to make sure not to cook on Shabbos. I have to make sure, speaking Lashon HaKodesh, that doesn't belong in that list, says the Rambam, not so fast. Limud Lashon HaKodesh is something which is extremely important, and therefore, we shouldn't just brush it under the rug and say, this is not something that we're going to focus our attention on. The Rambam says, it seems to be of very grave importance, which is basically stating, the Rambam seems to be telling us that this is subsumed under some sort of mitzvah in the Torah. This is subsumed under some category, and therefore the Rambam says we have to give it very important attention, because speaking Lashon HaKodesh is something that we really should be thinking about. In fact, in the Sefer Nehemiah, the Navi gives a very serious Musar conversation to the Jewish people. And he says, the state of the Jewish people right now is awful. And he says, Gam bayam mahem ra'isi es hayehudim. I'm looking at the state of the Jewish people, not the physical state, but the emotional state, the spiritual state. And he says, Hoshivu nashim ashdadios, amonios u'moavios. I see that they're marrying women who are out of the faith. What's happening? Why is there so much intermarriage? And then he goes on to say, Uvinehem chatzi medaber ashdodius. And their children are speaking, instead of Lashon HaKodesh, they're speaking ashdodius. They're speaking the language of their mothers, who are from a different nationality. They no longer know how to speak the Jewish tongue, the Jewish language, the way it's supposed to be spoken. The Ari Vimam, the Navi says, and I fought with them. And I cursed them. And I went out all out war with them, that we have to fix this. We can't continue like this. So you see the Navi is taking this in a very serious light. So you see that Lashon HaKodesh is something that is obviously very central. And there's a discussion in the Rishonim as to why it's called Lashon HaKodesh in the first place. Why do we call it the Lashon HaKodesh? What's so sacred? What's so holy about this language? Why don't we just call it a normal name, like English, French, Hebrew? Why do we call it Lashon HaKodesh? Where does that come from? So that's a discussion between the Ramban and the Rambam. Look as follows. The Ramban writes in his commentary on Chumash number Dalet, why is it that we call this Lashon HaKodesh? V'chein ha'tzli. Why do we call our sacred language the sacred language, Lashon HaKodesh? What's so special about it? Why don't you just call it any language like anything else is called? Says the Ramban, it's because all the words in the Torah and all of the prophecies that we know of, and anything holy in our history, all of them were communicated in this language. This is the language that God Himself communicates with us and with His prophets. As we know, God Himself offered the first two of the Aseres HaDibros, Anochi v'lo yelecha mipi ha'gvura shamanum. We heard that from God's mouth Himself, so to speak, and He stated that in Lashon HaKodesh. Now there's a question about what was the script at the time? That's not so clear. For anyone who knows anything about hieroglyphics, it's not exactly the same as the letters in Hebrew as we know it. I think they say that those were the original letters that were used in the times of the giving of the Torah. They didn't use the letters that we know them now. So even though it was the same language, but it wasn't the same letter structure as we have now, which is a big question, because if you ever looked, you'll look online later, they have a sheet of the hieroglyphics, and it gives you the conversion of what each letter stood for then and what it is now. So the Gemara tells us that when the Luchos were given, it was an absolute miracle that was displayed on the Luchos. Why? Because Mizeh u'Mizehim Ksuvim. You were able to look from any side and read it normally, even though it wasn't just engraved onto the Luchos, the letters, it was straight through and through. It was Charis ala Luchos. It was all the way engraved through and through. So if something is engraved from one side straight through the other side, how can you read it evenly from both sides? It doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says that was an absolute miracle. But on top of that miracle, there was another miracle. If you have something which is engraved straight through, so let's say you get to the... Right? So how do you have a Samach that's going to stand alone? Right? It's just going to fall down. So it says that the Mem and the Samach, Shebeluchos, B'nei Sayu Omdim. That was miraculous, because otherwise, how can they have stood on their own if it's engraved all the way through and through? Now, if you look in the old letters of hieroglyphics, are a Mem and a Samach the same way we have a Mem and a Samach? I don't think so. So what exactly does it mean when you say the Mem and the Samach and the Luchos were standing miraculously? What's such a miracle? It's only a miracle if you have a Mem and a Samach the way we know a Mem and a Samach to me. But if you have the old Mem and the Samach, perhaps it's not so miraculous. So that's something to consider. But anyway, the Ramban says over here that the basic reason why we assume that it's called Lashon HaKodesh is because the Torah and all of the Nevi'im were referred to in this language, and therefore it makes it holy, because holy things were always expressed in this language. You go down a little bit further, skip a little bit, three lines from the bottom. In this paragraph, the Ramban number Dalet. Here he quotes, Harav Amar B'Mora HaNevuchim. Now what is the Mora HaNevuchim? The Mora HaNevuchim is the Rambam's book of Jewish philosophy. So the Rambam writes in his Sefer Mora HaNevuchim, he also weighs in on the issue. And the Ramban quotes, why is it that the Rambam feels that this is called Lashon HaKodesh? So he says as follows, Al Tachshav Shenikra L'Shoneinu Lashon HaKodesh L'Gav Aseinu. Don't think, says the Rambam, that the reason we call it Lashon HaKodesh is because we feel so high on ourselves that, oh, our language is the only sacred language. Everybody else is profanity. That's not the reason why we call it Lashon HaKodesh. It's not because we think that we're so much greater than anybody else, but rather, he says, because it's such a sensitive language. He says, because Lo yimtzu bo shemos le'ever habi'ila b'zachar o b'nekeva v'lo l'tipo l'shesen l'tzor rak b'kino. He says, the Torah language is so sensitive, and when the Torah tries to express certain things that might make some people uncomfortable, like certain body parts, the Torah never gives an accurate description of what we're talking about. Let's say, we say when a woman gives birth, it's called Osa HaMakom. Where does the child come out from? That place. What's that place? We don't even know what it is. And that's how sensitive the Torah is, that it never uses a terminology that might make someone uncomfortable. And therefore, says the Rambam, because we have such a sensitive tongue, this is why it's called the Lashon HaKodesh, because it was so careful never to say any word, never to express itself in a way that might be a little bit uncomfortable for anybody. And therefore, this is called the Lashon HaKodesh, which is very interesting. The Rambam tells us that you have to think about Lashon HaKodesh. Now that you know about it, you look throughout the Torah, you'll find that it's such a sensitive language. You know, they say Rav Soloveitchik was once asked, why is there no Hebrew word for politicians? So nowadays we say politica, or whatever you're going to say. So politics, there is a Hebrew word, but it's not a real Hebrew word. So he said, it's not true. There is a Hebrew word for politics, and that is sheker. So that's it's interesting to think about, that there are Hebrew words that sometimes mean something else than you may have thought. But basically, the Rambam says that the Torah goes out of its way never to say a word which is going to mean something which might make us a little bit uncomfortable. In fact, the Sefer HaKuzari, which is written by Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, another Sefer, a very important fundamental Jewish philosophy, the Sefer HaKuzari, when he writes about why it's called the Lashon HaKodesh, he says, Lishonenu, our language is Yitzir HaElokim Upo'alo. This is the handiwork of God Himself. Now, every other language, Roman, German, Hungarian, whatever other language you're going to think of, that was created by human beings. But over here, says the Sefer HaKuzari, the significance of Lashon HaKodesh is because it is Yitzir HaElokim Upo'alo. It's because this was created by God Himself. And therefore, it has a very extra special significance above and beyond any other language that we might know. If you look, the Chafetz Chaim in number Hey, the Chafetz Chaim has in his Bir Halacha on Shulchan Aruch, writes the following. As we'll see a little bit later in the Shir, hopefully, that there's a discussion about which mitzvahs one may perform in other languages in the vernacular and which need to be stated in Lashon HaKodesh specifically. So over here, the Bir Halacha tells us as follows. Afal Pisha Min HaDin. Even though, strictly speaking, by the strict letter of the law, Mutter Lehispalo B'chal Lashon, one might be allowed to daven in the vernacular, not specifically in Hebrew as we know it. Still, Ha'arichal HaPoskim La'ochiach, She'adif Lehispalo B'Lashon HaKodesh. It's still better, even though one is allowed to daven in other languages, it's still better, says the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha, it's still better to daven in Lashon HaKodesh. V'hatam, why is that? Why is it that I should daven in Lashon HaKodesh if I understand a different language better? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Ki Lashon HaKodesh yesh lo segulos rabos mikol halashonos. There is something, there's meaning behind the words and the letters that we say. In any other language, there's no such thing. Let's say in Hebrew, just very simply, we have gematria. There's no such thing in other languages. So gematria means this, and if you have that letter, it means that, and it stands for something else. I saw a book upstairs in the library that I've never seen that gives you the background and the significance of every one of the Hebrew letters. There's something there. So most of us don't spend time looking into it because we have a lot more important things to think about and to worry about in our daily lives and to learn before we get to there. But there's a whole Torah behind the letters as well. So here, says the Mishnah Berurah, there are segulos rabbas mikol halashonos. We have something extra, unique, and special that stands behind the words and the letters of the Hebrew language. V'hu lashon hakodesh ha'kadosh baruch hu medaber bo neviyav. This is the language that God expressed himself to the Nevi'im, and therefore he says, this is something that even though we might have the option to daven in another language, still we should probably opt to daven in lashon hakodesh because there is such a deep meaning and significance behind our sacred language, the Lashon HaKodesh. So, what would you say is the status of modern Hebrew today? So this was a major point of debate. In the early 1930s, 1940s, this was a major point of debate. For anyone who knows anything about the history of the beginnings of the State of Israel, it's always of great fascination to me, because there was so much animosity at the time. Everybody was pushing to do something else. They were all trying to get to the same point, but they had different ways of getting there. So you had, obviously, Ben-Gurion v'chaverav. You had Ben-Gurion and all of his friends who wanted to create a state of Israel and are responsible, and we owe them a great debt of gratitude. And he had, at the same time, many refugees who came from Europe who also wanted to have their own place to live and their own place to be and to be safe, but they wanted that it should be very enclosed. They wanted it to be only their way, it should be the Aguda way, and that was it. There should be no infiltration at all from any outsources. And it's very interesting. If you read about the early greats of that generation, so you read about Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. He was a great tzaddik who lived in Yerushalayim, and the biography of him is called Ha'ish al Hachoma. So why is his biography called Ha'ish al Hachoma? It's a three-volume biography. So when my sister was in BJJ, it's a Haredi institution, so when my sister was there, so they had to write a report about Ha'ish al Hachoma. So she made the cover of Humpty Dumpty on the wall. And I don't think Rebbetzin David was impressed. But why is it called Ha'ish al Hachoma? So the reason is, number one, because he lived in Yerushalayim, which is a walled city. But the real reason why it's called Ha'ish al Hachoma is because he stood guard over the fences. He wouldn't let anybody infiltrate into the Jewish community at the time that was trying to be observant. He would not let any of the influences come in. Yet, when it came time to make a decision about what language should be spoken in Cheder, in Yerushalayim, here you have the fighter of Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, who's fighting tooth and nail for everything, and yet when it comes time to make a decision about what language they should speak, he said they should speak in Ivrit. So why was that the case? So number one, the Chazon Ish said at the time, for those who are interested in history, the Chazon Ish said the reason why it was important is because if we're going to have a Cheder that's only going to teach in Yiddish, what about all the Israelis who are Chilonim right now? We never have a chance of ever influencing them. How can we influence them if we don't even speak the same language? They'll never come to our school. They'll never come to our programs. If we're going to isolate ourselves by being self-selective and saying only those who speak Yiddish can come to our school, then we never have a chance of ever infiltrating into that community. And he said, therefore, it's a grave mistake to keep the Chadarim speaking in Yiddish. So Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld said, as much as I love the reason of the Chazon Ish, I think there's even a greater reason. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld said, the second reason why it's important is because this is one step closer to Lashon HaKodesh. Yes, modern Hebrew has a lot of new innovations, but in the end of the day, it's one step closer to the Jewish people speaking Lashon HaKodesh. And therefore he says, Yiddish doesn't accomplish that. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld was of the opinion that we should have the Chadarim in Yerushalayim teaching in Ivrit instead of teaching in Yiddish. Now, once we're on the topic, I saw a story this week in a sefer called Al Chomosayich Yerushalayim, which is an autobiography of Rav Moshe Bloy. Anybody know about Rav Amram Bloy? Anyone ever heard of that personality? No? Okay. Rav Amram Bloy was probably one of the most well-known zealots in the time. He was a crazy man. I mean, crazy in his own way. But he, I think they say about him, he used to lay in the streets on Shabbos that no cars should drive. I mean, like, crazy things they say about him. He ended up in jail who knows how many times. He was doing wild things. So he was a zealot, all claiming to be in the name of God. I don't know, I'm not passing judgment on him, but that's the kind of life he lived. So he had a brother named Rav Moshe Bloy, who also was the head of the Eda Charedus. So he was also very much in that train of thought. And Rav Moshe Bloy wrote a book about his relationship with Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. He had a very close relationship with him because the two of them were trying very hard to keep things the way they should be and not to allow any infiltration. So he relays the following story, which to me is so powerful if you understand a little bit about how much Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld fought against all of this that was his opposition. And then you read the story in the context, it's such a powerful story. Look at what he writes. Let's read it together. Number Vav. Shum pa veveso. There was another time that I was in his house. Bishas bikuri hayomi etzlo. He says, I had daily conversations with Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. I used to go to his house to discuss all the polemics that were going on, all the issues that we were dealing with. Every single day I was there. Nizgagala hasicha al ben Yehuda. So we're in the middle of having a conversation about something that was happening. And now the conversation goes into a different direction, and we start talking about Ben Yehuda. Now, who is Ben Yehuda? Instead of just thinking about the street, Ben Yehuda is the one. Right, so he's the one who wrote modern Hebrew as we know it. So Ben Yehuda was from the original Zionists. He was somebody who was not a believer in God at all, yet he's the one who made up modern Hebrew. So they got in a conversation in the home of Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld about Ben Yehuda. Now, what do you think Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld is going to say? Oh, you know, what a rush of this. Listen to the story. So here he goes, and he says, "Umishahu Hosef Bahaskira Shem Yehuda." There was someone sitting around the table who was obviously also a very feisty personality. And when they mention the name Ben Yehuda, he says, "Yemach Shemo V'Zichro." Let's not talk about him, because his memory should be wiped out. Look what he did to the Jewish people. Listen to the response of Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. Va'az Amalo, Ata Yodea. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld turns to the people at his table and he says, "Do you know? Ein ani noig lahagid kacha. I never, ever would speak in such a way. Hakadosh Baruch Hu bal harachamim. Don't you understand that God is a God of such compassion and mercy? Lanu ein kol musag. We have no understanding. Migoda rachamav. We have no way of understanding how kind and compassionate God actually is. Ubarur, and it is clear to me," said Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, "Shehu yachol lerachem gam al rishayim ka'ele. Trust me and believe me that God has room in his heart for even the greatest of rishayim, for even those who might have done the worst atrocities in their lives. Ha'amein li, she'eni lo tehet sara gam im yivada li shegam ben Yehuda yiruchah me'ez HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I would not be surprised if God has tremendous compassion and mercy on Ben Yehuda. And I would not be surprised either if Ben Yehuda has a very nice special place in Olam Haba. Kishahem ba'olam hazeh. Yes, it's true, when they live with us in this world, anu mechuyavim lehisnage lahem kevisha kaba Torah. Yes, we have an obligation to stand our ground and to stand up against them. Ki ba'olam hazeh hei mazikim u'makaklim es hasviva. Yes, in this world they might be destroying everything that we stand for. Masha Enkein, however, Kasherheim, Avru, Kvar, La'olam Ha'elyon, once they're in God's hands, they're no longer living with us in this world, it's not our obligation anymore to go after them. Klum Choshev Ata. And do you think, asked Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, She'ein called Tzad Tov Ben Yehuda? Do you think there was nothing good that came out of this person, Ben Yehuda? Klum Ata Choshev, She'ein Lo Shum Tzad Zchus? Do you think he gets no credit? The fact that he reignited the spark, that he's the one who brought us back to speak Lashon HaKodesh. Yes, he added, he augmented the terminologies and he made all new phrases, but he brought us so much closer to speaking Lashon HaKodesh. Do you think he deserves no credit for that? Do you think he doesn't have a place in Olam Haba just for that alone? And this was the response of Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapeach schar kol beria. God will never suppress the schar that anybody deserves for anything good they may have done. And it doesn't matter how much wrong they may have done, but that good will never be taken away from a person. And this, said Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, is the kind of perspective we should have on modern day Hebrew. Yes, it's different than biblical Hebrew. It's not exactly the same, but at the end of the day, it's certainly closer to Lashon HaKodesh than the languages that any of us speak today. Yiddish is not Lashon HaKodesh. But Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh. And modern Hebrew is an extension of Lashon HaKodesh. And therefore, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld was of the opinion that we should incorporate in our school systems, in Yerushalayim, even though we're so staunchly against everything that these Zionists might stand for. But in the end of the day, said Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, this is something we should be accepting, and it's something we should be incorporating into our school. So now that we have a little bit of an appreciation into what exactly the importance of Lashon HaKodesh really is, now let's see. We have a category of mitzvahs throughout the year which are not active mitzvahs, but they are rather mitzvahs that we perform with our speech. They are what we call mitzvah shebedibur. They are mitzvahs that we perform through speaking. And that list of mitzvahs is very extensive. And the Mishnah tells us in Masechah Sota that we have a different list of mitzvahs that need to be performed only in Hebrew. And there's one list of mitzvahs that can be performed in any language that one might be familiar with. So let's look at that list together. And ultimately we're trying to get to Sfiras HaOmer, so just keep that in the back of your minds. So let's see. The Mishnah writes in Masechah Sota in the beginning of the 7th parak. Here's the first list, which is the list of mitzvahs that can be stated in any language that we might be familiar with. Elu ne'amarim b'chal lashon. These are the mitzvahs that can be performed in any language that you might know. Number one, Parshas Sota, which is, we have an unfortunate story, a husband and wife having issues, and the husband, for good reason, he can't just make up a story one day and say, oh, I think that my wife did something wrong. It has to be that he has circumstantial evidence to say that there's something that his wife is not doing wrong, some sort of promiscuous activity. So we assume that the husband then, after going through the initial stages, brings his wife to the Beis HaMikdash, and they go through a whole process in the Beis HaMikdash. But part of that process is, there's a dialogue that takes place between the Kohen and the woman. So the Mishnah tells us that that conversation can be done in any language. As the Pasuk says, V'amar HaKohen Le'isha. The Kohen has to address the woman. Now, if you have a woman who lives in Israel and speaks Hebrew, so of course he's able to address and have a conversation with her in Hebrew. But what if you have a woman who shows up in the Beis HaMikdash one day from Chutz La'aretz? She shows up and all she speaks is Yiddish, or all she speaks is Aramaic, or all she speaks is Greek or Hungarian. So what are you going to do? How's the Kohen supposed to have a conversation with her? So obviously we learn that from the fact that the Kohen is supposed to have a conversation with this woman, it must be that that whole Parsha Sota can be stated in any language that we might understand. So far, so good. The second one on the list, Vidui Meiser. Vidui Meiser means we have a 7-year cycle of what we're supposed to do with our produce after it grows. So we have, obviously, the 7th year of Shemitah, and we have other years you're supposed to give Meiser Sheni, Meiser Ani. You're supposed to give Trumas and Meisers, all different things that need to be done throughout the 7-year cycle of produce. After a certain period in that 7-year cycle, a person has to come up to Yerushalayim, bring the fruits to Yerushalayim, eat them in Yerushalayim, and he has to state a confession that I did everything I was supposed to do, I did it all right, and I didn't violate any of the mitzvahs of the Torah that I was obligated to do. That confession, says the Mishnah, should be stated in any language that one understands. Why? Because if I'm standing before God and I'm confessing about something, so why does it make sense if I just read a script if I don't understand what I'm saying? So therefore, if I understand English or if I understand Hungarian, I should say it in any other language as opposed to saying it in a Lashon HaKodesh. Number three, Kriyat Shema. So we are allowed to recite Kriyat Shema every single day in the vernacular. Now, one has to be careful when saying Kriyat Shema in the vernacular that is the right translation. Take, for example, Art Scroll translates Shema Yisrael. How do you translate that? Hear, O Israel. That's the wrong translation. That's not what it means. Hear, O Israel means Shema Yisrael, you should listen. But here, Shema Yisrael means understand. Shema means to understand, not to listen. So hear, O Israel is not the accurate translation. So one has to be careful whenever davening in a different language, you have to make sure you have the right translation. Hear, O Israel is not the right translation. It's understand, O Israel. I don't know what O means either, but whatever that means, you would put that into this sentence as well, I assume. So Kriyat Shema, the reason why we assume Kriyat Shema can be stated in any language is because it says Shema Yisrael, understand. From the fact that we have to understand, that means You could say it in any language that you might understand. Then the next case is tefillah. Our Shmona Esrei each and every day can be recited in any language. We'll get into this in a few minutes in greater detail. So the reason for that is because tefillah is our supplication before God. We're asking Him for things that we need. How can we ask Him for things if we don't know how to express ourselves? I need a parnasa. So what am I going to say? Baruch Aleinu? I don't even understand what the words mean. And how many of us go and daven Shmona Esrei every day? How many of us really understand the words? V'lamalshinim. What's lamalshinim? Who are they? Where are they? What does the word mean? Al tehi sikva. V'chala risha. Who are the rishaim and who are the lamalshinim? Kerega tove. Do you want them to be destroyed right now, this second? V'cholai vecha, who are the oivim, who are the lamashinim, who are the rishayim? Anybody think about this? So we recite Shmona Esrei every single day. I doubt that we know the meaning of every single word. Well, says the Mishnah, this is why we are allowed to recite Shmona Esrei in the vernacular. We'll get to that in a minute. You go to the next one, Birchas Hamazon. Because the Pasuk says, Uve rachta, it should be a unique experience to you. You should bless, you should thank God. How can I thank Him if I don't know what I'm saying? So therefore, since it says, Uve rachta, my response to having a wonderful meal is, I should bless God because I feel so thankful. Therefore, it has to be done in a language in which I understand. And then we get a few more examples, but then you go on to the next list. You go on to the next list in the next line, which is, Elu ne'amar b'lashon hakodesh. There are certain mitzvahs throughout the year that need to be stated in, specifically in Lashon HaKodesh. And that's a list of mitzvahs that we have stated over here. So, this is the basic rule. We have certain mitzvahs that can be stated in, that can be said in any language. We have certain mitzvahs that need to be stated in Hebrew specifically. The Gemara says there is one caveat. Although it's true that tefillah can be stated in any language that one might understand, although that might be the case, however, the Gemara says there's a major difference between if a person is davening by themselves at home, or if you're davening together with a tzibur in shul, if you're davening together with a congregation. If you're davening alone, one has to daven in Lashon HaKodesh. One has to daven in the original text. If you're davening in shul together with a big group of people, then we assume you could daven even in the vernacular. Why should that be the case? Why should that be the case? What do you think? God doesn't understand what you're saying? So why should it make a difference if you daven together in shul or you daven alone at home, whether or not you're allowed to say it in any other language outside of Hebrew? So the Gemara qualifies the statement and says, look at Masechah Shabbos Daf Yud Beis, number Ches. Kol Hashol Tzerachav B'Lashon Aramis, anyone who chooses to speak in Aramaic and to offer their tefillah, their supplication in Aramaic, Ein Malachei Hashareis Nizkakin Lo. The Malachei Hashareis will not get involved in that tefillah. Lefi She'ein Malachei Hashareis Makirim B'Lashon Arami. The Malachi Hasharis do not understand Aramaic. Now, what exactly does that mean? They don't understand Aramaic. Tosis asked the question, they know what we're thinking in our heads, but they don't know how to decipher Aramaic. How can that be? And the later Achronim asked on Tosis, well, who told you they know what's going on in our heads? Who said that's true? You think the Malachim hover over and know everything you're thinking? God knows what you're thinking. Who said the Malachim know? And they bring a proof. What does it say? The Malachim come and they show up to Avram Avinu's tent and they say, Aye Sarah Shtecha. So you don't even know that Sarah is behind the door and you know what's in my mind? Well, the answer to that is very simple. They're only, by way of conversation, they're trying to open Avraham Avinu up. So they say, oh, how are you doing? And where's your wife? And what's happening? It doesn't mean they don't know where Sarah is. So this is a major point of debate. How much do Malachim know? How much do Malachim not know? But either way, the Gemara tells us that Malachim do not recognize. Either means they don't choose not to recognize, or it means they don't understand other languages. So therefore what? So therefore what? Don't we know that we pray to God Himself? Who is not familiar with the Yud Gimel Ikari HaMuna, the 13 principles of faith, where the Rambam tells us, look at number test, where the Rambam has in the fifth of the Ikari HaMuna, Ani Mamin BeHamuna Shalema Shabari Yisbarach Shemo, Lo Levado Roi Lehispalel, Ve'ein Roi Lehispalel Luzulasa. We don't need intermediaries. We don't have to pray to anybody else. So what do we need the Malachim for? We pray to God Himself. He understands what we're saying. So what do I care if the Malachim don't know what I'm trying to say? What do I care? What's the difference? I cannot daven in other languages because the Malachim won't understand it. What do I need them for? In fact, the Nefesh HaChaim writes a very famous comment. He says, sometimes we go to a tzaddik. And we go to a tzaddik for a bracha. Why do we go to a tzaddik for a bracha? Because we think the tzaddik can do wonderful things for us, right? But some people mistakenly take that way out of proportion. And instead of going to the tzaddik and asking that the tzaddik should pray on our behalf, they pray to the tzaddik. Right? You look at the accomplishments of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was an extremely accomplished person. We should all be lucky just to have an understanding as to what the revolution that he made in the world. Why did people take it? People were so enamored by him, and they took it way out of context. And they said, well, if he's such an amazing personality, and we're so enthralled by everything he stands for, and they should have been enthralled, and we all should be, you read some of the things that he wrote, it's amazing. But at the same time, it doesn't mean you pray to that person. That's a mistake. The Nefesh HaChaim writes, that's Avodah Zarah Mamish. Nefesh HaChaim writes, even though you're well-intentioned, and you go to the tzaddik because you know they have Ruach HaKodesh, or because you know that they can do divine miracles, still says the Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim V'Lajner, that is taking the Torah and making it into Avodah Zarah Mamish. You are serving Avodah Zarah, even though you're well-intentioned. So we don't believe in this. So what does it mean when we go to a tzaddik? What are we doing? What we're doing is, we're assuming that the tzaddik, because they are so much more holy than we are, because they are so much more connected to God than we are, we assume that they're closer up. So if he's going to offer a tefillah on our behalf, it will have more of a standing chance of being answered than if we offer a tefillah. Now, it doesn't mean we should stop davening, but it does mean that to go to a tzaddik is trying to get someone who's closer to God than we might be. Even though we all have a relationship with him, there are those who are closer, there are those who are not. So that's the understanding that we have going to a tzaddik. The Ramban writes in Parshas in Sefer Bereishis. The Ramban says on Chumash that this was a major point of debate that took place between Yaakov and Rachel. Rachel cannot conceive, and she doesn't know what's happening, and she's all upset, and she says to her husband, "Hava li banim, v'im ayin meisa anochi, I need children." And she begs her husband to give her children, and Yaakov Avinu gets angry at her. "What are you asking me?" says the Ramban. Why is he getting angry? Doesn't he know his wife? Doesn't he know she has feelings? Doesn't he know why she's upset? Says the Ramban, the reason why Yaakov Avinu is upset at his wife is because, what are you asking me? I'm not God. You don't pray to me. You want to ask me to offer a tefillah on your behalf is one thing. But to come and say to me, Hava li banim, Yaakov, you better give me kids? What do you think I can do? It's not in my hands. It's in God's hands. We have a relationship with only God and God himself. And therefore, this is very difficult to understand. So what if the Malachim don't understand what we're saying? And the answer is very simply, we do not pray to Malachim, ever. This is why there were those who objected to saying, let's say Reb Chaim V'Lajner said, we say on Friday night, Baruchuni L'Shalom, and Shalom Aleichem, so we ask the Malachim, give us a bracha. There were those who said, it's not proper, because we ask God to give us blessings. We don't ask a Malach to give us a blessing. And there's a lot of discussion and objection to a lot of different things that we say throughout the year. Let's say, Machnisei Rachamim, we say in the Slichos, we ask that they should have Rachmanos on us, the Malachim. We're asking the Malachim to have Rachmanos on us? What does that mean? What do we need their Rachmanos? We need God's Rachmanos. We don't need the Malachim to care about us. So what does it mean over here when we say, if the Malachim don't understand the vernacular, therefore you should not daven in that language? What it means is that the Malachim live in close proximity. They're like the mailman. So we offer a tefillah, but we're millions of miles away from God himself. We're light years away from him. So we need the Malachim to present our tefillah. Not we daven to them, but we need them to bring our tefillah closer to God himself. Says the Gemara, if a person davens alone at home, you need the Malachim's assistance, because how great is your tefillah in the first place? We all know we're not such great tzaddikim tzidkaniyos. We know that we're very humble. So we know that our tefillah needs some assistance. We need the Malachim to carry our tefillah up to God himself. And therefore, it's not a good idea to daven at home alone without davening in Lashon HaKodesh that the Malachim understand. However, if you're davening together with a tzibur, if you're davening together in shul, so then the Gemara tells us, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moes B'Tfilasan Shel Rabim. God will never turn a blind eye to the tefillah of a community. And therefore, when it comes to that, we don't need the Malachim's assistance. It's something to consider, it's something to think about. Why is it important to daven in a shul? Because Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moes B'Tfilasan Shel Rabim. God will never turn a blind eye to a tefillah that's offered by a community. And therefore the Gemara says you can daven in any language you want if you're in shul, because once you're together with a community, you don't need the Malachim's assistance. Your prayers go directly up to God himself. So you'll say, well, most of us probably do not go to shul every day, so we're missing out on that great opportunity? The answer I would say to that is, there is something very special to the Achronim say, even if you cannot make a shul and you cannot have real tefillah b'tzibur the way it's supposed to be done, if you daven at home at the same time that they daven in shul, you're considered a part of the tzibur. So that's something to think about. If you have a schedule in the morning and you're able to daven either at the same time. So in this community, it's easy. There's a minyan every 5 minutes. But really, to try to figure out how to daven at the same time as a minyan, that's something that's supposed to be really a quasi-tefillah b'tzibur. So when the malach is coming down to pick up all the prayers of the community, he'll pick yours up as well. But if you daven at 7 o'clock in the morning and he's only scheduled to be here at 9:30, you're gone already. So that's basically what we're told, and that's why davening in private is considered something you have to be much more careful about, and you have to say the original language as it was stated. But if you're going to daven together with the community, b'tzibur, we assume there is no need to daven in the Lashon HaKodesh specifically. One can daven in any language that they understand. We know that we say Kaddish every day many times throughout the davening. Kaddish is something that is stated in Aramaic. It's not a Hebrew prayer. So why is it, Tosfos, the Rishonim asks, why is it that Kaddish was instituted in the vernacular at the time? Why did they institute to say Kaddish in Aramaic if, after all the rest of davening is not in Aramaic? So why do we say that specifically in Aramaic? So some of the Rishonim say the reason why is because, well, Kaddish is something that we say after we have a shir, after we learn together, after everyone's together. So we even pull in the people who don't know Hebrew into the shir. Somehow they show up to learn a little bit, to become educated. So we may as well recite a Kaddish that they're going to understand once they're here anyway, so we may as well institute a Kaddish that's going to be in Aramaic. Okay, one suggestion. But the other suggestion that the Rishonim give is a very powerful one. The Gemara tells us that the whole world stands on Amen Yehi Shmei Rabba. The Gemara says that the recitation of Kaddish is such an exalting experience, which is, unfortunately, we speak through Kaddish and we're not paying attention and we don't have Kavana when we answer the words of Kaddish. But the Gemara tells us somebody who is Ona Amen Yehi Shmei Rabba B'chol Kocho, doesn't mean you scream. Somebody who says Amen Yehi Shmei Rabba with all of their concentration, without screaming, is Korin lo Gzardino Shal Shivim Shana. If God has had some sort of bad plan for you for the next 70 years of your life, if you answer Amen Yehi Shmei Rabba properly, with intention, you can get rid of all those evil decrees that were originally placed on you. So Kaddish is something which is a very serious experience. And therefore Tosfos writes as follows: the malachim are jealous of us that we have the opportunity to praise God in such a way, and they don't. So we don't want to make them jealous, Nebuch. We're going to do that to a malach, that's not nice. So let's say it in Aramaic so they don't understand. That's what Tosa says. We're going to recite Kaddish in Aramaic so that the malachim don't understand and they won't be jealous of us, which leads to a whole other discussion. Malachim can be jealous, what do you mean? A malach is a malach. What are they jealous of? They're jealous of us. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting up there negotiating whether or not he should take the Torah down or it should be kept upstairs. He says, "Klum kina yesh b'neichem. Why should you guys have the Torah? Benadam lachavero, mitzvahs don't apply to you, malachim. We should get it because we have kina. We hate each other. We're jealous of each other. So we have rules in the Torah that apply to us. But to you, klum yesh kina b'neichem." That's Moshe Rabbeinu's question. Do you guys ever have any sort of jealousy between one and the other? So don't you see from there that malachim don't have jealousy? So people say, oh no, it just means they're not jealous of each other, but they're jealous of human beings. Okay, you can say whatever you want to say, but basically, the reason why we say Kaddish in Aramaic is because, Tosfos says, the reason why is because Aramaic is a language that the malachim don't understand. And since Kaddish is always stated in Etzibur, Kaddish can only be said if you have Etzibur davening together, we don't need the malachim to offer our tefillah to God. We can do it on our own. And therefore, we speak in a language that the malachim do not understand. So far, so good? Now let's move to the next point. We have two categories. Some mitzvahs that can be said in any language, and some that can be stated only in Lashon HaKodesh. So let's take that category of mitzvahs that can be said in any language. Let's say, Birchas HaMazon, benching, can be stated any language. That's what the Mishnah tells us. What if I choose to say it in Hebrew anyway? I don't have an art scroll here. I know how to read Hebrew, but I don't understand the words. Re'enu, zunenu, parnaseinu, v'chalkaleinu. I know what all these words mean. Not really. Right? So we have Birchas HaMazon. I assume we don't understand every word. So why am I saying it in Hebrew if I don't understand every word? So you'll say, because I need the malachim to help offer my tefillah. But what if I don't understand the words that I'm saying? I know how to read Hebrew, but I don't understand the words. So what we're told is as follows. All the Achronim say, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chayyadim, the Primigadim, everyone across the board says the same idea. There are two ways of reciting these kinds of tefillos. If you say them in Hebrew, you fulfilled your obligation even if you don't understand the words that you're saying. Because Hebrew is Hebrew. And that's the way it was originally instituted. So even though you might not understand every single word of Birchas HaMazon, it's good enough. You can check off, you benched, you're good. Even though you might not understand every word of Kriya Shema, as long as you know to read the words, you're good. Check it off, you're okay. But if you choose to say it in English, if you choose to bench in English, and you're reading this kind of English, Rav Soloveitchik English, which none of us understand, right? And let's say you have a translation of Birchas HaMazon in that kind of English, right? And you don't understand, you know to read the words, but you don't understand what they mean, then you have not fulfilled your obligation. Clear? So there are two ways of fulfilling our mitzvahs. Either you could say them in Hebrew, whether you understand it or not. Hebrew is good enough. Option two is say it in English, but you better understand the language that you chose to say it in. If you don't understand English, but you choose to read the words anyway, you have not fulfilled your obligation. So now we move to the main part of the shiur, which is Sfiras HaOmer. So what happens when we come to Sfiras HaOmer? Let's look through the list again. Second sheet that we're on, the second side of the sheet, the Mishnah that we just read in number Zion teaches us that we have a list which are mitzvahs that can only be fulfilled in Hebrew and a list of mitzvahs that can be fulfilled in any language. Sfiras HaOmer, anyone see that on the list? No. So what happened? What happened to Sfiras HaOmer? Where is that? It should be on one of these two. Sfiras HaOmer is a biblical obligation. It's not something that came along later on. Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah in the Torah. So what does the Torah say? Am I allowed to count Sfira in any language, or does the Sfira have to be said only in Hebrew? So what's strange is that it doesn't show up in either of the lists, which is already room for question. So now listen, the Magen Avraham writes in Siman Tuf Pei Tes. Magen Avraham has a twofold chiddush. Listen to what he says. Number one, says the Magen Avraham, even though Sfiras HaOmer does not show up on either of these lists, says the Magen Avraham, Sfiras HaOmer can be recited in any language that you understand. Okay, which is already a chiddush, because the Mishnah doesn't say that. Mishnah does not include it in the list of things that can be stated in any language, yet, says the Magen Avraham, Sfiras HaOmer is on that list. So far, so good. However, says the Magen Avraham, this is not like any other mitzvah. And why is it not like any other mitzvah? Explains the Magen Avraham, because not only do we say that Sfiras HaOmer can be recited in any language, however, says the Magen Avraham, by Sfiras HaOmer, if you choose to say it in Hebrew, the way the text is written, and you don't understand the words that you're saying, you have not fulfilled your obligation. Meaning, contrary to every other mitzvah that we know about, we just said, if you say Kriya Shema in Hebrew and you don't understand the words, as long as you said in Hebrew, check. If you say Berachos HaMazon in Hebrew, even if you don't understand the words, check, you're fine. Says the Magen Avraham, by Sfiras HaOmer, you can say it in English if you understand English. But if you don't understand Hebrew and you choose to say it in Hebrew, you have not fulfilled your obligation. Why? Why is that the case? Number one, if the Magen Avraham is correct that you can say it in other languages, why is it not on the list? Number two, if he's correct that you can say it in Hebrew, why do I have to understand it? If I could say Kriya Shema and not understand the words and fulfill my obligation, how come I cannot say Sfiras HaOmer in Hebrew when I don't understand Hebrew? Why shouldn't that be the same? Question is clear? The answer is very obvious. The answer is because what we're asked to do by Sfiras HaOmer is to keep account. If you have no idea what day you're up to, you might read the words, but you have no idea what you're up to, how can you say you're responsibly keeping account and how many days you've counted and how many days you have left? You have no idea what you're up to nowadays. So says the Magen Avraham, it's very simple. Yes, it might be true that you could say it in any language, but the reason you could say it in any other language is not because it's like Kriya Shema, it's like Tefillah. Rather, it's because the whole mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is to understand what you're doing, to make sure to keep account. There's no reason for the Mishnah to state it, because it's so obvious. If you ask somebody to keep account and they don't know what they're up to, that's not called keeping account. Take, for example, we have in Chutz La'aretz, unfortunately for those who live here, we have Yom Tov Sheni Shogalias. We have a second day of Yom Tov. So we eat matzah 2 days, we sit in the sukkah for 2 days, we do everything twice. So let me ask you, how come we eat matzah 2 days in a row? We sit in the sukkah 2 days in a row. We have Shavuos 2 days in a row. Why don't we count Sfiras HaOmer 2 days in a row? Every night you should say, tonight is 3, maybe it's 4. Tonight is 4, maybe it's 5. Tomorrow is 7, maybe it's 8. Why? Why don't we do that? Why is everyone laughing? Why don't you laugh on Pesach night when we sit down the second night and say, oh, we're going to eat matzah tonight because maybe last night wasn't Pesach and tonight is. Why don't you laugh then? Why is it so ridiculous when we come to Sfiras HaOmer? The answer is because that's not a count. You're going to come to tonight, you're going to say, oh, maybe tonight is 6, maybe it's 7. What do you mean? Do you know where you're up to or do you not? So to eat matzah 2 days in a row, okay, not so bad. But to count Sfiras HaOmer 2 days in a row and say every night, maybe it's yesterday, maybe it's tomorrow, That doesn't make any sense. That's not a count. You don't know where you're holding. You don't know where you're going. So therefore, Sfiras HaOmer is something, number one, says the Magen Avraham, that we need to understand. So you can say it in any language that you want. But if you choose to say it in Ivrit, in Hebrew, and you don't understand the words that you're saying, you have not fulfilled your obligation. Because the nature of keeping a count is that we need to know the words that we're saying, we have to know where we're up to, and we have to know where we're headed. And if you're just going to count arbitrarily every night, because that's what the Chazan said, or because that's where your cell phone sends you a text, and you don't really know what the words mean, so you have not fulfilled your obligation of Sfiras HaOmer. So again, this is a discussion, a very rich halachic topic that really ties into many other areas of halacha as well. It ties into tefillah, into Kriyat Shema, Berachas HaMazon, other places also. But basically, Sfiras HaOmer seems to be a major exception to the rule. Although we know Lashon HaKodesh is very important, like we stated in the beginning of this year. And Lashon HaKodesh is important for so many reasons, like the Rambam and the Ramban tell us, because either it's the Lashon that God communicates with the Nevi'im, or it's because it's what God gave the Torah in. Or, says the Rambam, because it's such a sensitive language. Yes, Lashon HaKodesh is important. However, if we don't understand Lashon HaKodesh, the Mishnah tells us, we have an option to recite certain mitzvos in the vernacular that we understand. But what if we do not understand it? So the general rule is, again, the Achronim tell us, the general rule is, by Kriya Shema, by Tefillah, by Berachas HaMazon, just to review, if you say it in Hebrew and you don't understand the words, check, you fulfilled your obligation. If you say it in English and you don't understand the words, you have not fulfilled your obligation. However, by Sfiras HaOmer, it's an exception to the rule on both counts. Number one, you're allowed to say Sfiras HaOmer in the vernacular, even though the Mishnah doesn't tell us that. And number two, if you choose to say it in Lashon HaKodesh, the way it's written in the Siddur, but you do not understand the words that you're saying, you have not fulfilled your obligation, which is different than Kriya Shema, Tefillah, Berachas HaMazon, and everything else on that list. So this is basically the story when it comes to counting Sfiras HaOmer in other languages. And Mirtzah Hashem, we will continue next week with something else.